Here are the stories that you need to know about today. Yep, as I was just telling Igor, there is anger in America. Citizens in eight American cities, possibly more now, protesting and, in some cases, battling with government agents dressed in military fatigues. And their anger stems from a killing of another protester by ICE agents. The man appeared to be pushed to the ground and then shot up to 10 times. Iran says if they're attacked, it is ready for, quote, all-out war with the United States and Israel. That's what they're saying. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's talk about this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to welcome you to The Effect. As we begin this show, I just want you to know, kind of as a program note, that we're following the after effects of Davos last week. Big stories there. Most notably, the damage or the near collapse that occurred to both NATO and the EU as a result of Mr. Trump's actions in Greenland. But the biggest impact by far from everything that happened last week was made by Volodymyr Zelensky, who at the end gave this crazy tirade of a speech where he insulted the Europeans and Trump and the U.S., but mostly the Europeans, for not doing enough for him. For not doing enough for him. And that really has pissed off and set off a cascade of anger throughout Europe like I've never seen before since I've been covering this story, from Madrid to Rome, even in Paris. Zelensky is now being called ungrateful. He's being called undeserving. That is happening, by the way, as now the Ukrainian negotiators, are meeting with the Russian negotiators, mostly military officials and generals, as they try to talk to find an end to the war. But by far, the biggest story in America is this one, where something has happened once again that has set off a political firestorm. Another American protester has been shot and killed by his own government. And the whole thing was caught on camera and from different angles, as a matter of fact. The headlines from London to Beijing to Tehran are all talking about this shooting and the political fallout that it's causing around the United States. Now, Tehran is particularly important in this story. And I'm going to explain to you why Tehran is so important later on in the show. Meanwhile, here is what is happening on the streets of the United States since this killing took place. Protests have been breaking out in many, many U.S. cities, Minneapolis, San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, and beyond. Americans are angrily asking why the agents who are normally assigned to protect the border with other countries are instead now coming into their neighborhoods. And, quote, according to them, harassing and violating the rights of citizens. They point out that the people being targeted, attacked, and in this case, the latest killed by Immigration and Customs agents, also known as ICE, are mostly legal U.S. citizens. All right, now I'm going to show you the video. See that man right there in the middle of the street? He is the guy who eventually gets shot and killed. Here is the first video of the confrontation of the protester. His name is Alex Preti. He's a critical care nurse who works in a nearby hospital and was protesting ICE agents in Minneapolis. As you can see, he confronts the agents, but simply with his phone, and they push him to the ground. It's important to know that it's perfectly legal to protest, and it's also legal to photograph the agents as long as they are in public. Now, watch this. As we watch that video of the shooting itself, let me read you what the agents wrote in their report. They say, quote, the individual approached them with a 9mm handgun. And the officers attempted to disarm the suspect, but he violently resisted, they say. Fearing for his life, the agent fired defensive shots, implying that he was shooting at them and they had to shoot at him. Now, is that really what happened? Let's watch this video from another angle. Okay, here we go. There's the man filming the officer, and the officer is pushing him back. There's no gun being brandished, pointed at the officers, or being used to threaten the officers. As a matter of fact, as you watch this, you can see right there what he has in his hand is a phone, right? He's holding a phone in his right hand. And according to the ICE agents, he approached them with a 9mm, but there's no evidence of this 9mm that they're talking about. Okay, now, let me show you another video. There he is. Look at that video. See the guy taking the gun away? You can see them wrestle him to the ground in this video, and you can see in slow motion, they find a gun, but they take it away from him. And you can see the officer pulling the gun from the man's waistband. Then after taking what is described as the man's gun, which is legal, by the way, to carry in the state of Minnesota, you will see the agent take steps back, and then he begins to fire several shots at the suspect, killing him on the spot. Let's watch that.
Oh, what the f***? They killed him? Did they f***ing kill that guy?
Yes, they did kill that guy. Here's the video, there it is, of the shooting. You see the agent backing up as he's firing. By then, the man is unarmed. And you could hear the agent taking several shots as he stands over the man, kneeling on the sidewalk. What exactly was his crime, though? It's not known. There's nothing on the video that illustrates that. It's legal to criticize the officers. It's legal to protest the actions of officers. It's legal to take photos of the officers. And it's legal to carry a handgun. That's why so many people now across the United States are kind of outraged by this. They're saying, fine, detain him, even arrest him. But to kill him? That's what they're asking after watching the video. And they say they're especially upset that the report filed by the officers doesn't match what they see in the video, right? It suggests that the man approached them intending to shoot them while brandishing a gun. That's what the report says, that the man came with a gun, pointed at them, threatening to kill them. But that's not what we see in the video. At least that's not what I saw in the video. You tell me. Among those furious, or the most furious, is the mayor of the city where this happened, Minneapolis.
I just saw a video of more than six masked agents pummeling one of our constituents and shooting him to death. How many more residents, how many more Americans need to die or get badly hurt for this operation to end? How many more lives need to be lost before this administration realizes that a political and partisan narrative is not as important as American values?
So here's the question, because he's suggesting that this is partisan, right? Here's what he goes on to say. And it's proven out to be true. The ICE agent's most visible operation so far in the United States appear to be taking place in mostly Democratic states that did not vote for Donald Trump. Let me say that again. The ICE agents are being sent to places where people did not vote for Donald Trump. They include, but are not limited to, Minnesota, California, Maine, Chicago, Illinois. So what does that have to do with Iran, right? I mentioned that earlier. Well, Iran is now using this killing in Minneapolis as a means to accuse the Trump administration of hypocrisy. Essentially, what they're asking is, how can you want to punish us for protests in our country when the same thing is happening in your country? But they go even further, right? They go even further. Iran's leaders, from their president all the way to their spiritual leader, the Ayatollah, are saying that there is a significant difference between the protests in the U.S. and the protests that are taking place in Iran. And here's what they say. Here's how they say they're different. They say that the protests in Iran were caused and instigated by the United States, who devalued their currency on purpose to cause people there to be angry and protest, and then set Mossad agents through Israel to instigate the violence. Whereas in the United States, they say the protests are organic, not caused by outside interference. Are they right? Well, you know who agrees with them? The Israelis, who have admitted already that they did, in fact, have agents in Tehran among the protesters. You know who else agrees with them? This is crazy. The U.S. Treasury Secretary, who last week in Davos talked about this and said, yeah. He confirms there was a U.S. intervention, that the U.S. intentionally tried to devalue the currency in Iran. Here he is saying it.
Last March, I said that I believe the Iranian currency was on the verge of collapse, that if I were an Iranian citizen, I would take my money out. President Trump ordered Treasury and our OFAC division, Office of Foreign Asset Control, to put maximum pressure on Iran, and it's worked. Because in December, their economy collapsed. We saw a major bank go under. The central bank has started to print money. There is a dollar shortage. They are not able to get imports. And this is why the people took to the street. So this is economic statecraft. No shots fired. And things are moving in a very positive way here.
He's taking credit for collapsing the government of another country so that the people can go without, and in their desperation, will then take to the streets. That's what he just said. Nonetheless, the Trump administration is moving a large naval force, including the aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln, and accompanying warships toward the Middle East in a show of strength for another possible attack. Mr. Trump is calling it an armada. But the president, speaking from his favorite perch these days, Air Force One, also says that he hopes that military action can be avoided somehow.
We have an armada. We have a massive fleet heading in that direction, and maybe we won't have to use it. We'll see.
You said would you like the Supreme Leader to step down or to go into exile?
By the way, Iran has re-equipped its military with both Russian and Chinese weaponry, according to reports, to be used against any attacks, against Israel, or even to stop the oil flow in the Persian Gulf, because you heard right here on this show last week, one of the representatives for Iran said that there was talk of bombing ships and shutting down the Persian Gulf, which would affect the entire oil prices all over the world and affect the world market. Now, they say if the U.S. attacks this time, it will trigger all-out war, all-out war. And that is a direct quote. Now let's talk about Israel, where three journalists were killed over the weekend. The men were reportedly killed in a drone strike while on assignment. They were documenting humanitarian relief work at a refugee camp in Gaza. Among those killed by the IDF was a guy named Abdul Rauf Sha'at. Remember his name. He's also known as Abed Sha'at. In fact, I've got video of him talking about the importance of journalism, the importance of letting the world know what is happening in Gaza.
Every day we bid farewell to a journalist martyr, but we will continue because this is the path we choose, and we will carry on. Their message will not stop. God is sufficient for us, and he is the best disposer of affairs. Targeting journalists, this is deliberate targeting. The camera is right there. Everything is visible. The camera shows clear images. Journalists are known to the whole world. They work for foreign news agencies.
Sha'at, you could argue, is now with God. He's dead. He was killed. He worked for several news organizations, but most of all, he worked as a freelancer for CBS News. CBS News. CBS News is a storied outlet. It was once the most important news network in all of America, by far. Nobody even compared. It's also important to me, personally. I began my career because of CBS News. I was what was called a CBS News scholar, which means that they picked me, they sponsored me when I was just a young man, and they paid for my schooling so I could become a journalist. That was awesome. But that was the CBS of old. The CBS News of today is a joke. Do you know that they have not condemned the killing of this man? Their employee. He worked for them. They haven't condemned the people who killed him. Shot, worked for them, but because he's Palestinian and because he was shot by the IDF, they don't defend him, even in death. Why? Because CBS News, an American news network, is now essentially owned and run by Israel. That's right. Several Zionist billionaires with direct ties to Israel and the IDF, they give money to the IDF, the people who killed this guy. Those men, those billionaires, purchased and now control CBS News. Just as they're about to control TikTok, and they're about to control and own CNN as well. That's why the killing of a Palestinian journalist, even though he worked for them, is not condemned by CBS News. I thought you'd want to know. After a short break, I'm going to be joined by Jose Antonio Zorrilla. He has worked as Spain's ambassador to numerous countries. Perfect guest to discuss all of these geopolitical developments that we're seeing on this day. Do not go away. His name is Jose Antonio Zorrilla. Those of us who speak Spanish would say Zorrilla. He is a Spanish ambassador who has worked diplomatically in many countries, including Georgia, by the way. And he's good enough to join us now. By the way, he's also a very prolific writer, and he's a thought leader. And it's my pleasure to now welcome him to the show. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you, Rick, for giving me the chance to explain a bit my point of view, which is a rare chance. But thank you.
There's a couple of things going on in the world that I think you as a European are going to respond to. But you know what? Since I finished with that last story about Israel, I thought I'd get your take on that. You know, as a journalist, and because I'm Latino or Hispano and grew up in the United States, I am indebted to CBS for helping to put me through school. But the idea that they would not defend one of their own employees shot by the IDF, and by coincidence, they now happen to be owned by, you know, Zionist billionaires in the United States, that's unsettling, isn't it? That does not speak well of where we are in this world when it comes to journalism anymore.
Well, it's unfair, and it is a blatant lack of loyalty to one of your employees. I find it unacceptable. Besides, I find it unacceptable that the journalist, for the simple fact of being a journalist, may be killed. So yeah. It's doubly unacceptable, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny, but, you know, it almost seems like we're living in an era where the journalists and the institutions of journalism that we used to pride ourselves on in the West, for example, in the United States, in Spain, in other European countries, they don't seem to be covering the stories fully anymore. They cover stories almost with a point of view.
Well, Rick, I don't know, because most of what I read are magazines on international relations, daily news, not so much. So I am not an expert on journalistic affairs like you are. But it is self-evident that the quality of journalism is not what it used to be. I remember the good old days of the El País, which is the journal of reference in Spain, and, you know, look like an Encyclopedia Britannica all the time. Right now, it's, you know, like a leaflet of the university in the 60s, you know, practically. It is, you know, it's not the same as... The downgrading has been considerable, and I think the United States is the worst profession of all, including the political class. Even beneath the political class, The lowest of the lowest are the journalists.
Yeah, I agree. Which is, by the way, why I'm here and no longer there. Mm-hmm. Though, as you know, I worked in all the big institutions there. I worked at CNN and Fox and NBC and Univision. And I got to tell you, they're just not what they used to be. Let's switch to your expertise, which is geopolitics with an emphasis on Europe. You're a European. You're in Spain.
Yep.
Last week had to be one of the worst weeks in the history of Europe. They were revealed as, in many ways, I don't know, conflictive, weak, powerless, infighting, embarrassing in many ways. What the hell happened?
I think powerless is a very good word. Remember, Rick, we are a defeated continent. The United States won the war, and we have to follow. This is what is taking place right now. Hmm. And there is, of course, and there is not a single voice in Europe. There are 27 different voices. You can imagine. It's like a joke, you know? Hmm. But it's true that even though all this is bad in itself, you know, the worst of all is that we fight against our most profound interests. This is what I cannot understand. I cannot understand how the United States decided to break the knot between Germany and Russia, and Germany didn't say anything, you know, or France, by the way. They were all delighted to accept it. It's crazy, you know. Well, they have spent the past 4 years in a state of ruin.
Yeah, you mean Nord Stream? Yeah. Nord Stream.
They not only Nord Stream, you know, all the rest, the war, unnecessary war, yeah. Everything. It goes against the interest of the continent, and yet everybody is enthusiastically supporting all this. To me, this is a mystery, you know. It's a clear case of...
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting the way... Me fascina, the way you just put that, right? I'm fascinated the way you just put that, because what you said is the United States got the Europeans to go along with this whole Ukraine fiasco, with the coup in Ukraine and everything else that's happened in Ukraine, essentially to try and goat or get it or to weaken Russia. And the Europeans go, okay, let's go. We're in. Now a new president, Mr. Trump, comes in and says, I'm not sure that is what we Americans want anymore. And now the Europeans are like, well, what do? We already said yes. Now do we say no? It's like they twist in the wind. You know what I mean? Un papalote, like a kite.
I know what you mean, and definitely you are right. You know, it's crazy. How on earth they decided to go behind this absurd strategy, you know, to bleed Russia, you know. Why? It's absurd. But I understand in the case of the United States is delusional, you know. They want to win where Napoleon and Hitler were not able to win. So they were determined. But the case of Germany, you know, with all the experience that these guys have, in international relations, you know, very specifically with Russia. Remember Bismarck. When we were together, Germany and Russia, it was good for our two countries, and it was good for Europe. Mm-hmm. Whenever by foreign intervention, we broke this alliance, it was bad for our two countries and for Europe. With this legacy behind, how on earth they jump overboard? They jump, you know, into the boat of the aggressivity towards against Russia. That beats me. I can't understand.
Well, yeah, and there's also a incredible hypocrisy that was on display last week when Mr. Trump started talking about taking over Greenland. They were appalled. They called it an act of colonialism. They called it an act of, Mr. Macron said that Mr. Trump was a bully. They said all kinds of things. But yet they never said these things when the United States did the same thing in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, yeah. In Afghanistan, yeah. Vietnam. I mean, all those were fine. But you mess with an iceberg with 50 people on it, and now you've crossed the line. That seems so crazy and hypocritical.
Yeah, listen, Rick, listen. Not many days ago, the number one of the armed forces of Denmark said, yes, we have some problems with Greenland and the United States, but the existential enemy of Denmark is Russia. sounds like a joke. It is true. It's true. Now, second, Carney, finally, Carney has spoken and said the truth, the horrible truth. The faithful Cordelia, the favorite daughter of King Lear, was not that faithful after all. She pretended. Canada pretended. Canada turned a blind eye to the cruelties and crimes of the United States somewhere else in the hope that that would prevent the United States from treating them as they were treating Chile, Granada, Panama, Vietnam, and they discover that after all, they are going to be treated exactly like the others on the menu. They are on the menu. They expected to be on the table, but in fact, they are on the menu. You see, Rick, the line, very thin line, there's a very thin line between loyalty and infamy, and they cross it.
Do you believe Mr. Trump is right when he argues that he doesn't need Europe and that Europe has basically getting away with U.S. protection for too long without giving back enough? Do you buy that argument?
Well, the big question is not that. The big question is, from whom do we have to protect ourselves?
Yeah.
Where is it? Where is the danger? Why do we have to spend such an incredible amount of money? Who is threatening us? Please, Rick, clarify the situation for me because I can't understand. Where is the existential enemy of Europe? It's incomprehensible.
Do you not fear, as a Spaniard, that any day now Russian paratroopers are going to land in Madrid and take over Spain? Do you not fear that?
I'm too old to expect. I'm too old, you know, to expect that they fall. The feminine legion of the Russians, because they would conquer everything in 24 hours, you know. But I'm too old. I'm happily married, you know. But no, I'm not afraid of seeing anybody. I wish all the Russians come to Spain as tourists and enjoy La Vida Loca among us. We are very good at that in Spain, you know, living La Vida Loca. It's a national speciality, you know, and I hope they come home, they come here and enjoy their life. And of course, we rely historically on the United States to defend us from the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Union is no longer there, you know.
Yeah.
I don't understand, you know, it's incomprehensible.
It's funny, Russians love Spain. I mean, Russians
love Russia. Well, we love Russia too, you know, and it has to be clear, you know, we have nothing against Russia. But considering what he says, Trump, that Europe is irrelevant. Well, let me tell you, the turnover between the United States and Europe is more or less equal. It's more or less the same. Hmm. And the addition of the two equals 30% of all the turnover in the global world. So to say that Europe doesn't play any role in the life of the United States is a joke, you know. We have basically the turnover is the same one way or the other way.
Well, I got to tell you, there's something that people don't talk about. I was talking to a dear friend of mine in Mexico City a week ago, and he mentioned this to me, and I think he's right. He said, remember, Rick, you have to also understand that when Trump says that Europe has not paid enough for the defense and for NATO, he might have a point that the United States has paid more than Europe has paid. Okay, but what does the United States get for that? The United States has had an agreement, correct me if I'm wrong, since World War II, where, yes, we will provide your defense, and in exchange, you let us put military bases in your countries, You use our currency. You use our banking systems. You use all of our monetary systems to propel the United States as the leading economy in the world. And in exchange, we'll help protect you. That's kind of the agreement that they've made. But nobody talks about that.
Well, Rick, you are talking about the agreement right now. That's the truth. That's the truth. The naked truth. You have just said, you have just touched the gist of the problem. The price of all this is submission. Hmm. They command, we obey. This is the story.
But why don't European officials, you know, the Starmers and the Macrons and the Merz's and the Ursulas and all of these people who seem, I mean, I'm sorry for saying this, but they just seem really weak to me. I just said that. Why don't they say that? Why don't they stand up and say, but wait a minute. Yeah, you want us to pay, but let me tell you what we have paid with. I don't hear them making solid, frank, man-like arguments anymore.
I agree with you, but believe me, this is not a question of being weak. Weak is a word employed, generally speaking, in the Trumpian world. It's not weak, it's incompetence. They are incompetent. That's the question. All these affairs, all these questions are well beyond the intellectual horizon of these people. They simply don't understand the slightest idea of what they are doing or what they should be doing. Remember, Callas, not long ago, said the head of the diplomatic service of the European Union, so to speak, you know, she said, it's a good idea that Russia loses the war, you know, because then we can split it in two or three smaller units. Don't smile. This is super serious. A diplomat cannot say this. You know, an ambassador is not supposed to say this. And besides, the other day, she was very surprised. What? China? The Second World War? Was she there? Really?
Kaya Callas.
This is the one in charge of the international affairs of the European Union, by the way. She's not received neither in Washington nor in Moscow.
Are you concerned about the Iran situation and the possible escalation there, given that Mr. Trump has announced he is sending an armada? You're Spanish. You know a little bit about armadas.
Armada in the English-speaking world looks like something threatening and terrible, but armada is the technical name of the Navy. So today, in the Air Forces of Spain, the Navy is called the Armada. The technical name of the Navy is Armada. Mm. But, of course, the connotations in the English-speaking world are different for obvious reasons. But when it comes to Iran, quite frankly, I don't know what to think because the United States has sent one carrier to Iran, well, to the Indian zone. And Israel, not mentioned, but very important, has opening bases in Somaliland to hit the Houthis, to attack the Houthis, you know. This is an unwelcome development because it means another front of war. Now, are they going to attack Iran? Are they not going to attack Iran? I think, you know, it's impossible to know. For me, it is impossible to know. You know, it's, I don't know. I'm sorry, Rick, I cannot give you an opinion.
Well, let me tell you what I know, and you tell me what your reaction is to it. On this program, when I was talking to a spokesperson for the Iranians, he told me that if the United States hit us this time, we will not hit Israel. We will hit the Persian Gulf, and we will block the oil flow in that area. How important is that, and what kind of damage do you think that could do to global markets, Mr. Ambassador?
A lot. That is a critical factor. This is why the Houthis, which are practically nothing, they're a tiny minority, Shia, but very small, are so important because they can practically. It's a choke. The choke point in world affairs are critical for the transit of oil. And if they are able to definitely choke it completely, the situation for the markets is going to be difficult. To begin with, there will be a surge in the oil prices. It wouldn't be good for anybody. Nice. Yeah. So let's hope that that doesn't happen. But it's a good strategy. Well, from the point of view of Iran, it's a good strategy. Besides, what the West or the United States doesn't have is a political alternative. So, okay, there is a regime change. They oust the Ayatollahs. And then what?
Yeah. Then
what do they put in place? Because the Shah is like a joke, you know. Mm-hmm. This guy, you know, he's been shown
praying
in the Wailing Wall and with a kippah. So if you think this is going to be the next president of Iran, you are in for a surprise. Quite frankly, I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen either. Hey, talk to me about what your neighbors and your family members say. When you talk to people, I didn't grow up in Spain. I grew up in Miami, which is a little bit like Spain. In America, what do people in Spain say about these situations that are going on? The war in Ukraine, the situation with Greenland, the seeming collapse of both EU and NATO these days. Do they fear it? What is the thinking in España?
What is the thinking in España? Well, the official Spain is very much like France or Germany. The Russians are bad because they invaded an innocent little country.
Yeah.
Ukraine, yeah. Well, officially, I am a kind of renegade. And people think that I am under the sway of Putin and paid by him or the secret services of Russia, including my own family. A different thing altogether is the professionals. Professionals are a different story. They may not say that in public, but definitely in private, having lunch and the like, they all think like me.
Hmm.
And that's the truth.
So, and these are people who are thought leaders. These are so the people inside European countries like Spain, the people who read, who digest information like from people like Jeffrey Sachs and John Mearsheimer and others. They know the truth.
Absolutely. When having lunch, they agree with you. Then they go. They take up to the forefront and speak and say absolutely the opposite.
Why? What is so hard about saying no? What they're telling you is not true. There's a reason why Russia invaded, and it had to do with a provocation that was caused by such and such. Even if you don't believe that, suppose you don't believe that, but you believe another story. No, China is not completely crazy communist trying to take over the world. No, Iraq was not developing nuclear weapons to destroy the world. These narratives, what's so hard about calling them out in Europe?
Well, it's a very good question, but they have a YouTube channel where I try to speak out the truth, and I'm afraid without much success. There are, of course, the chosen and the professionals who had very clear ideas, you know? Hmm. But they can pay their, you know, if they are able, if they dare to speak out the truth, they can pay this very, very dearly with their careers. And in fact, I have advised some friends of mine to stay apart from me because I don't want to cause them any trouble.
Wow. Yeah, that happens in America too. If you say the wrong thing, I'm an example of it. If you say the wrong thing, they could destroy your career, take away your job, and now as a human being, you feel like, well, I don't want to affect my family, you know, I don't want my wife and my children need to eat, and if I can't be a journalist because I disagreed with, you know, Israel's policies, that's crazy, but it happens. And it happens a lot, unfortunately. What a delight. Mr. Ambassador, thank you, sir, for taking time to take us through this conversation, for your insight, your very keen insight on what's going on in the world right now. Thank you again. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Rick. Anytime.
And now to the comments. Like to know where you get to tell me now what you think of the shows that we're doing here. And a lot of you are commenting on my interview with Sergei Karaganov, who is an advisor to, you ready for this? In case you didn't see it, Brezhnev, Yeltsin, and Putin as well. Sorry, back over here. We start with Bridge Parmar. He says, well done. This man is closer to the truth than most. And then the Sword of Kings says, it's tough to read. The Sword of Kings says, nice, Rick. And cool how he calls Russia a Eurasian country and not just a European country. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting point, too. Lightcrasher says he strongly disagrees with that. He says, quote, I disagree that we are Asian. Some of us are, but mostly we are inheritors of the Eastern Roman Empire. Moscow is the third Rome. Interesting perspective, huh? And then Ingrid Still says, what a wonderful man. Why can't we see and read more from people like him? I wish there were more people like him in the West. Finally, Thomas Booth says, Mr. Sanchez, I love that you're independent and speak common sense. Also, I might say, the new studio is looking great. Aesthetically, huh? Nice. Very pleasing, he says. And a great choice of colors. That's nice. I didn't pick the colors, by the way. That was Gene. Or was it Boris? Or was it Alexei? We'll let them fight it out. All right, can I go over here now? This camera? Okay. As usual, all the feedback is appreciated. I'm on YouTube. Check out Journalistically Speaking, and don't hesitate to speak your mind. Also, you can look for me on X. Just go to Rick Sanchez TV. Hey, thank you so much for letting us into your homes, and I'll be looking for you next time.